This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, we'll hear about one effort to curb youth violence in Kalamazoo. The Educating for Freedom in Schools annual summer extravaganza is tomorrow night at Kalamazoo College. But first, the Kalamazoo Gay Lesbian Resource Center has a new executive director. Jay Maddock was appointed earlier this month. He served as program director of the organization since 2012. Maddock takes over at a time when issues such as gay marriage and discrimination protection are being decided in the courts and debated in the legislature. Jay Maddock, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Let's do a little background first on the Gay Lesbian Resource Center in Kalamazoo. Tell people about the organization, what it does, what it's doing on a day-to-day basis, I guess.
Yeah, the Kalamazoo Gay Lesbian Resource Center has been an organization in Kalamazoo for over 26 years, trying to serve the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, questioning community and their allies in the greater Kalamazoo area. We have programs for youth, programs for seniors, and we have social events as well as support groups.
Has the organization become more visible? Has it grown? Are there more people now that are a part of it in this day and age than there were, say, when it started 20-some years ago?
Absolutely. I think the Kalamazoo Gay Lesbian Resource Center has a really rich history full of growth and expansion and always trying to expand our reach. And so 2 years ago was when we first grew the staff the most. So we had doubled our staff from 2 people to 4 people, and we're continuing to find new ways to grow every day.
So as the new executive director, what are some of your thoughts about how to continue growing?
You know, I think that it's one of those challenges that nonprofits face, right? How do you build capacity and build staffing? It's an issue that goes across all the nonprofit sector. And I think for the Resource Center, our goal is to make sure that we are always serving the parts of our community that need us the most and the parts of the community that are most often forgotten and ignored by the larger community. So I think our growth is making sure that we're keeping ourselves in check that way, and we're making sure that youth, homeless youth and LGBT aging populations and communities of color and transgender folks are not forgotten or left behind in our community, and that we continue to find programs that really serve them.
And is there a certain difference, perhaps, in how people are viewed based on those things that perhaps a white, successful, fairly well-off gay person is viewed differently than someone who is perhaps older or, as you say, maybe a different race, maybe African-American, and perhaps also is viewed differently if they are not as wealthy?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, any time that you have these intersections of marginalization or, you know, intersections of identities, you know, you come with more obstacles and you're absolutely viewed differently by mainstream America. And so, you know, we've made lots of strides in the LGBT rights movement, and we've done, you know, we've had great successes in the last couple years. And I think it's important for us to make sure that we're moving our entire community forward and not just some.
We are speaking in late July, and in early August, oral arguments are going to be presented for the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, the federal court, concerning the federal court ruling that Michigan's ban on same-sex marriage is unconstitutional. That ruling has been stayed and is under appeal. How important is this for the gay community that you deal with in Kalamazoo?
You know, I think that the issue of marriage equality that's taken our nation is an important one, in that it is an issue that, and a statement that people are people and that people should have access to the same rights and should be treated equally. And so I think that in Michigan, where gay people and transgender people can be fired for being gay or can be kicked out of housing for being transgender, you know, having a court say, well, we also see you as equal, and who you love does not distinguish who has access to marriage. I think it's a really important statement, and I think that it'll impact people in our community greatly.
Now, you say it's an important statement. How important is it from a practical standpoint? Because there are people who would say that, look, civil unions can offer many of the same legal protections as marriage, and then it's not called marriage, and you satisfy people who have religious objections and those sort of things. So practically, how important is it that people be legally allowed to marry?
I think it's crucial. I think that any time in our history when we look back to have, you know, a sort of a, you know, separate but equal, that's sort of, you know, a dangerous walkway of exclusion. And I think that it's really important that we make sure that people have the access to legal recognition that gives them state protections as well as federal protections.
If the court were to uphold that amendment to the Michigan Constitution that bans same-sex marriage, I realize it would probably be an appeal, but if the court challenge is ultimately unsuccessful and that amendment stays on the books, do you think it is time to perhaps start a petition drive and revisit it with Michigan voters, or at least try to get it on the ballot so Michigan voters can weigh in again?
Absolutely. I think that if the Court of Appeals does not lift the ban, this is not over. I think the fight for, marriage equality has been one that's been, taking state by state. And we just saw that yesterday Virginia lifted their ban. And so I think if Michigan did not continue in that trend, the whole country would be looking to see what we did next.
You mentioned earlier that people can be fired for being gay. There's all sorts of discrimination protections currently not in state law for people who are gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender. There's been some discussion about that Governor Snyder said he'd like the legislature to take a look at perhaps expanding Michigan's Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act, include protections for sexual orientation and gender identity. Explain why you think that change would be important, what it would mean to citizens here in Kalamazoo.
Right. I think that in Kalamazoo and across the state, people want to know that they have access to employment and they have access to housing free from discrimination. And I think it's really important for Michigan economy to keep and hold talent and skill here in our state and here in our city. And here in Kalamazoo, we have a non-discrimination protection ordinance that does include sexual orientation and gender identity. So Kalamazoo has made a statement along with over 30 other municipalities in Michigan that all citizens of these cities should be treated equally and fairly. And I think that Michigan, it's time to change our Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act to include sexual orientation and gender identity so that we make a statement and that we make it, against the law to discriminate against someone just based on their sexual orientation and gender identity rather than, their work experience and their work ethics and who they are as a person.
One of the concerns you will hear raised about the idea of expanding those protections are people's religious concerns and religious rights. Can those two things coexist, religious freedom as well as protection from discrimination?
I think that they absolutely can coexist because if we look at the way that we want to treat other people, we want to treat them equally and fairly. And to have someone employed, it should be based on, what they bring to that employer and what they bring to that job. And I think that, protecting LGBT folks and straight folks from discrimination and protecting people from discrimination, sort of outweighs and trumps someone's, religious freedoms. And I think that, if someone was being discriminated against based on their religion, they have that protection already. And so I think it's time that we extend that and everyone will be protected then under the expansions.
Does your organization, the Kalamazoo Gay Lesbian Resource Center, have a pretty good relationship with faith organizations?
Absolutely. We have a faith alliance, and that's made up of religious leaders and lay people in the greater Kalamazoo area who are for LGBT rights and LGBT equality. And we have a really strong relationship with them. And actually, in 2009, when Kalamazoo had the non-discrimination ordinance going up for vote, it was our faith alliance that really gathered around that to really talk and bring that issue up into our community. And they continue to raise awareness in faith communities and around the greater Kalamazoo area.
There's recently an incident in Kalamazoo where a lesbian couple's house was vandalized. There was graffiti sprayed on the walls. And you said that this was an example of why there needs to be a change in state law. Explain what you mean.
So in Michigan, the hate crime legislation does not cover sexual orientation or gender identity. And so what this means is when you have a person or a family that is targeted a crime is targeted towards them because they are lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender, there aren't additional penalties for that hate-focused crime. And I think that that needs to change in Michigan, because it's one thing when your home is broken into, there's a violation that happens. If any of us have ever been broken into or have had that situation occur, we know that that's a violation. But when you're specifically targeted and there are messages of hate that go along with that, it's a much more egregious crime. And right now in Michigan, there's no extra penalties for that. There's no further protections for people who face, you know, crimes such as that.
As I'm sure you're aware, there's an argument that says that hate crimes in general really punish the wrong thing, that what we should be punishing is the action. In other words, breaking into the person's house, vandalizing the house. Why you did it is not necessarily all that important. What's your answer to that?
I think intention and the reasons behind why we do things are important in every action that we take, positive or negative. And so I think when a crime happens and we have someone who, you know, I mean, this couple no longer feels safe in their home. There is messages of hate and threatening messages. The messages "move or die" were spray painted on, like, on their wall in their living room. And so when we have crimes that have elevated, you know, the intensity of the crime, then the punishment and the sentencing should be heightened as well.
When something like this happens in a city like Kalamazoo, does it send a message that the community is not welcoming to gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender people?
You know, I think when a hate crime happens close to home, it affects the entire community, not only just LGBT folks, but allies as well. I think it affects our entire community, and it sort of shakes it. And the LGBT community hears, you know, day in and day out through various sources, you know, that they are less than, that they are not, you know, that they are other than. And when crimes like this happen, that, you know, shakes that foundation even more. And so I think it's important for us as a community to come around and find positive messages and find ways to come together and hold each other up. And I have to say that I've been really taken aback by this community, who has really come to support this couple and really has quickly come to take action to form a hate crime awareness coalition, and to really step up and make sure that this community hears messages of love louder than messages of hate.
And tell people a little more about the hate crimes coalition that you just mentioned.
Right. So the Hate Crime Awareness Coalition has put several organizations and community leaders together. So we have the Kalamazoo Gay Lesbian Resource Center. We have the CARES, the Community AIDS Resources Education Services, CAFE, the Kalamazoo Alliance for Equality, Mothers of Hope, as well as Badlands Strategies, and other community leaders who have stepped up to form this coalition to make sure that we're teaching the community about hate crimes and where our legislation stands, and really how to keep the community safe. And we'll be holding a community forum on August 14th at 6 p.m. at the Douglas Community Association.
You know, the incident which happened fairly recently at this couple's home got a fair amount of attention. Are there other things which perhaps aren't quite as noticed? Perhaps they fly under the radar. Maybe they don't happen quite the same level of intensity with spray painting hate messages, but still perhaps are chilling to someone and do send a message that we maybe don't hear about as often.
Yes. You know, in the last month, there's been, you know, at least two other cases that have been reported, ranging from, you know, verbal assault to other graffiti. And furthermore, there's many cases that never get reported because you have people who may not be out or open to their neighbors or to their job. And so they don't want to report it because they don't want the attention and they don't want other people to find out, or they're too scared to report it because they don't believe that the community will come behind them and support them. So not only do we have other cases that are happening on on a regular basis, we also have cases that we're not hearing about ever.
Are there other issues out there? We've talked about a number of things here, you know, same-sex marriage and discrimination and hate crimes, those sort of things. But are there other issues out there which, to this point, are flying below the radar, but we might hear more about in the next year and a half?
Yeah, you know, I think that there's several issues that are rising a little bit more quietly than marriage equality or overturning Elliot Larson Civil Rights Act. I think that
amending the Elliot Larson Civil
yeah,
Rights amend, Act.
Sorry, amending, yeah, overturning the marriage ban and amending the Elliot Larson Civil Rights Act. I think that serving the service and need for the LGBT aging population is something that we're going to start hearing a lot more, because as more people have been out over the last few decades, that means that we have more people who have lived a life open and out, who are now reaching a time where they need additional help or services, or they're going into senior homes, and those aging agencies are not yet ready to serve those LGBT folks. And so we have people who are going back in the closet at the end of their life. And that's a huge issue. When you're reaching the end of your life, you should really be able to live openly and out and really not have to worry about hiding parts of who you are. So I think
there are agencies which are saying we won't let someone in for care if they're gay or lesbian.
Yeah. I mean, you have agencies that aren't, even if they're not saying you can't, come here, their messaging is loud, and they're not building a community of, being open and affirming, and they're not, preparing their staff on, how to treat LGBT and care for LGBT aging adults. So I think that that's a huge issue, and making sure that we don't forget about our seniors is something that you'll start to hear more of. I also think that there's been an increase of violence towards transgender people, particularly trans women of color. There's been more murders and more assaults, and I think that is an issue that we have to take in to make sure that we're creating a world that is safe for trans folks, and a world that is safe for, trans people of color, and a world that is safe for trans women of color. And so that's another issue that I hope sort of starts much larger dialogue and a much larger ripple effect, to where we're making sure that we're creating a safe space for our entire community.
Jay, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Jay Maddock is Executive Director of the Kalamazoo Gay Lesbian Resource Center. This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. An event aimed at ending youth violence is being held Friday in Kalamazoo. Educating for Freedom in Schools is presenting the annual summer extravaganza and finale, which will be held at Kalamazoo College's Dalton Theater at 6:30 Friday night. Damara Gardner is founder and executive director of Educating for Freedom in Schools. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us.
And we also have a student with us, CJ Bragg. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for bringing me in this lovely studio.
So, Damara, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about the background of Educating for Freedom in Schools.
Educating for Freedom in Schools started off as the Kalamazoo CDF Freedom Schools program. Myself and another individual brought the program to the Kalamazoo community in 2008. I had been introduced to the Freedom Schools model in 2007 based on work that I had done with the National Resource Center for Racial Healing. And I had never seen a program as comprehensive as Freedom Schools, and really felt compelled to bring the model to our community. And so our work began. And in 2008, we served about 48 K through 8th graders through the Freedom Schools model. And we have served young people every summer since then. So we started off as a partnership with Communities and Schools Kalamazoo. We just operated as a program for the first 3 years. So that was from 2008 to 2010, engaged about 150 K through 12th graders in our efforts. And my advisory board and I, in 2010, at the end of the summer, started to talk about what it would be like to create an organization that wasn't just providing services during the summer, but also year-round for young people, and providing other kinds of services that we felt that the community had either not been providing or had just barely scratched the surface. So 2011, we began the journey to create our own organization. In October of 2011, we morphed into Educating for Freedom in Schools. And ultimately, our mission is all about providing high quality, culturally relevant literacy experiences for all youth and families throughout Kalamazoo County. So we emphasize all by ensuring that it's accessible from an income standpoint, because we know that those opportunities are far and few between throughout the community.
CJ, how did you end up being involved in Freedom School?
Well, my mom ended up telling me something about Freedom School in 2010. So I was like, okay, it sounds like it's a cool thing. I might, you know, see a little people I know. So we ended up, it was at Mount Zion on the north side at the time. And I went in, it was just like everybody was all cool, laid back, you know, clapping, everybody up and about. It's early morning, you know, I was like, I can't do this, but I ended up getting, you know, used to it, and I started talking to more people, you know, seeing how things was working, and it was just, after that, I just took off with film school.
So what's going to happen on Friday night?
So on Friday night, we have two things that are going to happen. We have an education reception that starts at 5:45. It's just a half an hour of mingling and hearing from some key people about our work and what our overall impact is. And actually, CJ is going to be one of our youth speakers that evening. And we have Michael Evans, who's going to be speaking on behalf of the community, as well as Tiana Harrison, who's actually been with us for 5 summers. We have engaged her family. So I feel like we have a partnership with her and her family. We'll have some refreshments provided by Bull Restaurant. So there'll be 15 minutes of mingling, and then we'll hear some mini presentations from the three individuals who are going to be speaking, Michael Evans, Tiana Harrison, as well as CJ Bragg. And then we will transition into the Dalton Theater at 6:30 for our 6th annual student showcase, since this is our 6th summer. And we focus the entire summer on youth violence because of some of the recent deaths that have happened, particularly a young man that was with us our very first summer, passed away from the Edison neighborhood. And it really hit home for me. We had not engaged with the family since 2008. One of the things that's challenging when you are operating a standalone program is that you may move from site to site, depending on, you know, where the support lies. And that first year we moved from Fresh Fire on down to St. Joe School. And so we hadn't been in touch with the family for 5 years. And then to hear that this young man who was, you know, nearly what I would consider a baby, I mean, he was probably 8 or 9 when he first was a part of our program. And then to hear that he had passed away, it really broke my heart. And I felt like we could do something within the time that we had in the program. So that's really been our focus. So all the presentations will be concentrated on that, as well as our core principles, which are literacy, social justice, health and wellness, family engagement, and then intergenerational leadership development. We have this overarching theme that every child can make a difference. And it's about making a difference in yourself, within your family, your community, your country, your world, and with hope, education, and action.
CJ, can you give us an idea of what your message is that you want to share with people Friday night?
My message is going to be mainly about how Freedom School program works, or how my time was in Freedom School, and how it kind of got me out the situation that I was in at the time before I got into Freedom School. So I'm going to be telling about that, and then I'm going to touch the spot on nonviolence and tell how we can try to make a difference on not trying to, you know, in our community and stuff like that.
Some of those things you mentioned, Tamara, earlier about the goals of Freedom School, how tied in are they with that issue of youth violence, you know, the academics and some of the citizenship type things? Does that all sort of run together?
You know, I believe that young people who have goals in life and have the supports necessary to be able to fulfill those goals are typically on a track of success and not necessarily in the line of fire, if if you will. Now, there have been some circumstances of high achieving students being caught in the line of fire. So we know that that happens, right? Absolutely. But I think overall, if young people have a focus in mind and they really have hope related to their future, they're going to be engaged in activities and engaged with people that help to support them in that. So I think that there is a direct correlation with literacy, with social justice, with really feeling like these aren't issues that we just want to talk about, but that young people do have a voice. And not only do they have a voice towards these issues, but they can actually do something with the support of caring adults in working to resolve some of the issues that our community is currently faced with around youth violence.
CJ, how much do you and your friends talk about some of these things? They get a lot of attention in the paper, but do you guys find yourself talking about some of these incidents with, you know, youth violence, guns, shootings, those sort of things?
Yeah, me and my friends do talk about it a lot because actually we knew the person that Ms. DeMoros just spoke of, and I was actually real close to the person. So, yeah, I talk about that with my friends a lot, and I talk about how it was kind of messed up that it just had to happen like that, and I feel like we should be able to stop stuff like that from happening.
Do you think you can? I mean, do you think that's something that can happen in this community, that people can put a stop to the violence?
Yes, I think it can happen. It's just everybody need to work together on it to make it stop. To help us stop.
Tamara, how many young people participate in Freedom School?
On average, we have about 50 K through 12th graders. So we're actually one of the few summer programs that provide enrichment for high school. Most programs just cater through 8th grade. But we recognize that young people in high school also need to have something constructive to do over the summer, particularly with the job market the way that it is. I know that when we started even in 2008, I think there were more opportunities for youth employment, and those have dwindled a little bit in part because of funding. And so it's great that we can provide this opportunity for kids across all ages, and specifically for the high school youth. We focus a lot on career development, and that's something new this year because we want to make sure that they've got some tangible skill sets that can be transferable. And so in some ways, we kind of treat it as a job. So they've been able to interview professionals in the community based on respective areas that they may be interested in. I can vouch for their experience over the summer, so I'm going to be providing a lot of recommendation for them. They recognize that if they complete at the 6 weeks, there would be an incentive in place for them, just like you would get a paycheck if you went to work. And so I think that there's something valuable to be gained from the Freedom Schools experience, regardless of what age you're in.
Is it weighted towards any particular age? Do you get a good spread, you know, good representation K through 12, or, you know, does it tend to weight a little heavier in any particular age?
That's a great question. We have more applicants for our younger grades, inevitably, because I think that by the time young people get into middle or high school, I don't know how much families are necessarily focused on having some strong literacy experiences and just strong enrichment experiences during the summer. And so we actually get, as I said before, most of our applications come in that way. But, and I'll tell you though, for like high schoolers, we ended up having roughly about 14 high schoolers that were engaged with during the summer. The most difficult group of individuals to recruit, in part because they have more choices. And I think there's a sense that I just kind of want to kind of hang out with my friends. I want to sleep in. And I can tell you that I have been so impressed with the level of commitment that all of our high schoolers have had. They show up every day. I want to say CJ has probably only missed 2 days the entire summer. And I think that that's really noteworthy considering all the options that they have.
So how do you think you can take this idea of 50 people who are in your summer program, maybe some more make it to this event Friday night, but can you take them the message of nonviolence or tamping down the violence among youth and get it to go throughout the community?
That's certainly our hope. I believe that young people have a place at the table. I believe that they have something to offer that we don't always give them credit for. I think that they have a lot of creative ideas that they can apply to these efforts. And I think that we have to provide the space for those ideas, and we have to help to build their capacity as leaders, because, you know, all of us, you know, are leaders in our own right, but we didn't get there by happenstance. There were people that came along in our lives that spoke life into us, that gave us opportunities to be developed over time. And I think that sometimes we discredit the worthiness of young people and their ability to solve deep-rooted problems.
Damara Gardner and CJ Bragg, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Damara Gardner is Executive Director of Educating for Freedom in Schools in Kalamazoo. We also heard from CJ Bragg, a student in the program. Links with more information and longer versions of interviews can be found at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.